policy committee to order, and we do have a quorum. So, has anyone had a chance to review the minutes? Representative Lewick?
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lewick, and got our agenda before us. Oh, yeah, are there any questions or additions to the minutes? Oh, all right. All those in favor of approving minutes, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Minutes are approved. Then House file. Let's go with Representative Munson if you're ready. House file 3374. Would you like to move your...
Yes, I would, Chairman Pearson. I move that the House File 3442 be referred to the Committee on Agriculture Finance.
Is that House File 3374?
Is that what we have?
Yeah, that's correct, 3374.
Okay, I will correct my motion to move that House File 3374 be.
I was informed that that's not your fault. So, but I'm not the type of person that would run staff over with a bus like some people who have just entered the meeting might do. I wouldn't do that type of thing.
I'm well aware of freshman hazing, and I understand how.
All right. Do you have a? Go ahead and proceed with your testimony, Representative Munson.
Okay. Well, this this bill will allow. So currently, just to give some background on this, for this has to do with pesticide applicators. Currently, there are three different categories for pesticide applicators. There's private applicators, like myself, who just use restricted use pesticides on private property. There's commercial applicators. Who are applicators for hire, and then there are non-commercial applicators who apply restricted-use pesticides in the performance of their official job. So this is like people that, like janitors and such, that want to spray some glyphosate on sidewalks to remove weeds. This bill, which already exempts government employees from having to get a commercial applicator's permit for spraying if it's a non-restricted use, allows state contractors to also fall into that category. And this specifically is people who are spraying pesticides at wayside rest areas and subcontractors of the DOT.
And I understand you had a testifier?
Yes, I have... Dan Knutson from Greenview here to testify.
If you could come forward, Mr. Knutson, and state your name for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Don Knutson. I serve as the executive director of Greenview Incorporated.
Go ahead with your testimony.
Greenview Incorporated is pleased to be supportive of this change in the law regarding House File 3374. Just a little background, perhaps, on Greenview. Greenview is a nonprofit organization based in St. Paul, and what we do is we seek employment opportunities for lower-income elderly people. We work with government agencies across the state. Some of you have probably never heard of Greenview, but you've stopped at a highway rest area. Been at a state park, stopped at a MnDOT headquarters building, a highway weigh scale. We work in about 200 sites across the state. We employ about 660 people per year. The reason that we're here today basically is just to give you a little background of who we are. We target employment of people that are 65 typically to as high as 80 years old, 90 years old sometimes, and they all work in highway rest areas. We provide light custodial responsibilities, cleaning of those locations. I've been doing this now for about 30 years, and one of the eyesores we often find in rest areas is the fact that we've got sidewalks, hundreds of feet of sidewalks, We got weeds growing up in those sidewalk cracks. And currently, we really don't have an opportunity as a contractor to the state of Minnesota to apply a non-restricted use chemical in those locations. So that's one of the issues we're dealing with in rest areas as we have 20 million people a year coming through these sites. The other issue we occasionally run into is the control of bees, whether it happens to be in a play area, in a recycling bin, a garbage container. And what happens a lot of times is when people come knocking on the door of our custodians and say, we've got a bee problem here, how do we address it? The only way we can rightfully do so is to call somebody from MnDOT who might be 100 miles away or a commercial applicator to deal with that problem. So what I'm advocating here is the ability for us as a nonprofit organization to be classified as a non-commercial applicator and to use a non-restricted product to control some of those problems we're dealing with at rest areas and state parks and some of those other facilities we serve. So I know that Josh Stampier is here today from Department of Ag. There may be some technical questions that I can't answer, but I think Josh can provide the answers you're looking for. Thank you.
Thank you. Do members have any questions for the testifier? Representative Salk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm not being foggy about this. So non-controlled solution for wasps would be like going to some place where you can just buy it off the shelf, spray it on the hive, and probably disperse or get rid of your problem. On the issue of dandelions growing through the cracks and that sort of thing, aren't you going to have to use a fairly volatile chemical in order to even do anything that has any length to it? I'm concerned that we may be just opening a door to kind of a haphazard use for the very volatile things, weed killers and that sort of thing.
Mr. Knutson.
Mr. Chairman and Representative, basically what we found is if, in my own personal experience in rest areas and, personal at home as well, if you use the glyphosate, which is an over-the-counter product, and you use it at the right time of the day without windy conditions, when the sun is up, you apply it in the proper conditions, I think you can have some effective control. We're not at all interested in getting into the commercial level of those particular products, so we would certainly want to stay away from that.
Any other questions? Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and not necessarily a question, but just a comment on how important being able to get those folks out, and I'll speak to the Conservation Corps folks. Our state rec area up at the Cuyuna area, we got all these mountain bike trails and walking trails, and we're blessed with a huge amount of poison ivy. That's just the lay of the land where I live. So Conservation Corps, in cooperation with a lot of local citizens, volunteer citizens, come out, and every year they walk those trails and spot spray as necessary to make sure that we don't have little kids get tangled up in poison ivy. We've got 3,500 acres and miles of trails. And so what Representative Munson is doing here really makes sense. We need to have more flexibility, make sure that we don't make it too difficult. Now, in that environment, we've got Minnesota DNR. That's a state rec area. So you've got people there also that are experts at identifying the poison ivy from the whatever that you definitely don't want to hurt. So I just want to thank Representative Munson for coming forward with this, because any of these relatively minor adjustments we can make to make it easier and less expensive. I understand the difference it'll make up at the state rec area on these walking trails, because anybody's had a serious go around with poison ivy in their life, particularly as a youngster, you just don't want to go there. Thank you.
Any other questions? Are there any other folks that would like to testify on House File 3374? If not, then Representative Munson, do you have any closing comments?
I look forward to the support, and I renew my motion that it be referred to the Ag Finance Committee.
Fantastic. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The motion prevails. We'll bring up House File 3442 next.
Thanks, Representative, for holding down the fort. Appreciate it, Representative Pearson. Next up, bill is House File 3442. And Vice Chair Backwood, would you care to move your bill?
Yes, I would move House File 3442. Where are we moving it to?
It'd be Ag Finance.
Ag Finance.
Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair and members. House File 3442 relates to the bio incentive program, which was passed in 2015 with very strong bipartisan support. The bio incentive program supports the development of new technology for producing advanced biofuels, bio-based chemicals, and biomass thermal energy. The program enjoys strong statewide support because of its potential for creating new value added industry that benefits agriculture, forestry, and projects in the metro area also using organic waste. It's hard to anticipate every possible type of project, and that's why we're here today, because since this was written in 2015, we have seen some new technology that authors were not aware of back in 2015 when bioincentive was first passed. This bill does enjoy support from the broad range of stakeholders in Bioeconomy Coalition of Minnesota. We are talking about agriculture, forestry, environmental community, and variety of other bio-waste industries. And I do have one testifier, Chair.
Any questions from members for the bill author? If not, let's hear from your testifier. Identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Brendan Jordan with the Great Plains Institute representing the Bioeconomy Coalition of Minnesota. I can keep my comments very brief. The Bioeconomy Coalition is a group including the forest products industry, agriculture, both startup companies and established industries, and a variety of other stakeholders. We supported the passage of the bioincentive program in 2015. The sense of the coalition is that these are common sense changes that really, as Representative Backer said, address sort of the fact that technology changes quickly and we don't anticipate everything from the beginning. So, you know, our sense is that this amendment is totally consistent with the original intent of the program. And so we as a coalition are very supportive of this bill. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. Anybody in the audience who would care to testify either for or against the bill? Seeing none, a question from Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Not a question, just a comment. Being the author of the 2015 bill, I very much agree that we didn't know everything we know today, and that happens all the time. So I appreciate Representative Backer. I think this is a movement in the right direction. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. Final comments, Vice Chair Backer, on your bill.
No, just we didn't have a crystal ball, so we don't today. So who knows, we might make a few other changes. So, but I would ask for your support. Thank you, members.
So Representative Backer renews his motion to pass House File 3442 and move it on to Ag Finance. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion passes, and the bill is on its way. Thanks, Representative. Thank you. Next up on the agenda today is House File 3472. That would be Representative Swedzinski. I believe he's here. Welcome to the committee, Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Anderson. Appreciate the opportunity to come before this committee. We do have an author's amendment, A1. If you would have a member that would be so inclined to move that, we'd appreciate it.
I will move House File 3472. And Representative Swedzinski, go ahead.
Thank you. So House File 3472, really, we have a burgeoning industry here in the state of Minnesota, and that's saltwater agriculture production. We have companies like True Shrimp, which are going to be potentially located in southwest Minnesota and throughout the state, throughout the region. And we need to really look at regulation in the way that agriculture is defined within the state of Minnesota. You know, current state law really didn't anticipate saltwater agriculture at this scale, and this bill provides some of the needed regulatory framework for any new emerging saltwater agriculture industry. This bill's been drafted with the participation of the Department of Agriculture, the DNR, the MPCA, and the Board of Animal Health, and with the expertise of the USDA Animal and Plant Health Inspection Services. This is important work done collaboratively to provide for biosecurity for the industry to protect our native waterways and wildlife. We have agriculture statutes, Chapter 17, that apply to this section of law, and that's why we are before you. So with that, I would maybe ask nonpartisan staff, maybe Colby Sullivan, could kind of look through the – maybe you want to adopt the amendment, and then we could go through the bill. If Colby
members, you have the A1 amendment in your packet, and would you care to explain briefly what it is, and we'll go to your question, okay? Representative Swedzinski?
I'll let Colby kind of speak to that if he'd like. That'd be great.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Chair, would you like me to speak to the A1 amendment?
The amendment, yes.
The A1 amendment would modify House File 3472 by making some changes to the reference documents that the Department of Natural Resources would use when considering a transportation or importation permit or a permit to import saltwater aquatic species into the state, shrimp or other species, and to move them within the state for purposes of making sure that the animals are not released into the environment. So the changes then are fairly technical in that way, changing the references to the documents that the DNR would use for purposes of reviewing the permit application. The final portion, lines 1.8 through 1.10, are more substantive. They say that a shipment authorized by the Commissioner of Natural Resources must be quarantined at the receiving facility according to a quarantine plan that would also be approved by the Commissioner of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan. Any questions from members? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author, maybe, or to whomever may understand it. In your amendment on 1.4, you delete surveillance, which appears to be the end piece or the last word in the aquatic animal health surveillance. So I don't know, does that change that particular regulation? And then what is the AFS Fish Health Blue Book, and who puts that together?
Representative Swedzinski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, I do have phone a vet, which would be Dr. Jessica Fox, who could potentially maybe answer that question a little bit better than I.
Good morning, ma'am. Identify yourself, and you want to have the question restated?
For the record, I am Jessica Fox. I'm the veterinarian and director of biosecurity and veterinary services at RELCO and for the True Shrimp Company. And Mr. Chair and members, so your question is, what is the AFS Blue Book? Is that correct?
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On the amendment, you're deleting the word on the amendment 1.4. It states, page 3, line 8, delete surveillance. And I believe what you're doing is, where did I see that? Aquatic animal health surveillance. And it looks like surveillance is, maybe I'm mispronouncing the word, but is part of a particular code in the book. So I'm wondering if by deleting that language, that word, does it have an effect on your bill and how you're tracking this and keeping alien species from our waters? And then an explanation of what the AFS Fish Health Blue Book is. There's two questions.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Fox, go ahead.
Okay, Mr. Chair and members, the AFS Blue Book is a book that was actually suggested by the DNR. That's a reference manual that they're very comfortable with that talks about surveillance for disease in aquatic species. So that answers that question. And correct? Is that okay?
Not really.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Mahoney.
Who puts that book together? For mechanical and a variety of other things, they have the AMSI codes out of Washington put together by a whole group of nationally recognized scientists and people in the field. I'm new to the Ag Committee, a year and a half now, and I have no recognition of that particular organization, so I just would like to know who puts it together. Is it a bunch of farmers that get together and put their rules down, or is it driven by scientists and veterinarians and other things?
Representative Swazinski.
Mr. Chair, I believe it's kind of an industry-accepted book, and I'm not positive exactly who puts it together, but I would be happy to get that information to you.
That would be fine because I'll ask it in Ag Finance. And then the other one.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I better get back to the amendment. On page 3 mm-hmm. of the bill, line 8, you're deleting the word, is it surveillance? And if I look at that and I read the line above it, the World Organization for Animal Health, the Aquatic Animal Health Surveillance, does that mess up that whole title to the book? I mean, I don't have any, that doesn't make sense that you would eliminate one word of the title of what appears to be a regulatory agency.
Ms. Fox, go ahead.
Yeah, Mr. Chair and members. Okay, I understand now. I apologize. So basically, there are, and they're not necessarily regulatory agencies. They are, they're reference, they're for reference. And so the OIE is one organization. They're international. And so when we were working through this, we referenced a certain chapter, and instead of doing that, it was striking that word surveillance, and it was just to include the OIE Animal Health Code and this AFS Blue Book that the DNR is very comfortable with and references on their side.
Thank you.
Any further comments, Representative? Okay. Representative Poppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And based on Representative Mahoney's comments, okay, so now I'm more confused. But surveillance just in this and line 3.8 is capitalized, which means that it's part of the earlier aquatic animal health. So I guess I'm not sure that it's clear that we do delete that. Do you want that deleted or not deleted? Or is aquatic animal health also to be deleted? I guess it's just, and maybe Mr. Sullivan knows more, but maybe I'm just, I think Representative Mahoney just added to the confusion, didn't necessarily disperse.
Representative Swazinski, hope you can shed some light on this.
So if I could reference the amendment, so lines 1.13. So page 3, line 7. So the amendment says delete everything after the word code. And then the next line, page 3, line delete surveillance. So just the reference to the chapter.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying.
Sorry.
Okay.
All right.
I think we have that, yeah. So you have to look also at line 7 when you delete things after the word code, then go down to line 8 to finish.
I like to read down and sometimes when, we're good.
Thank you.
Let's not make the hole any deeper, Representative.
That's a neat part of this technology, Mr. Chair, is it's not deep.
Very, very good. Any other questions? Representative Lewitt.
Not a question, just a comment on the OIE World Organization. Those of us that deal in agriculture, those are the folks that set world standards. Now, it's up to every country to decide whether you're going to abide by them. That's a well-recognized system out there. I see it on how we allow livestock to move across the Canadian border, how we allow livestock to move to and from Mexico or off the continent. As long as we're looking at that code, that's a world-recognized group. But again, then it's incumbent upon each country or state to make a determination of what, you know, what they adopt. But I say, just so there's no confusion about that level of stuff, it is clearly a world-recognized system and, you know, another set of regulations.
Follow-up comment?
I appreciate the support of the amendment.
Okay. Okay, any other further questions on the amendment? We haven't officially passed it yet. Any other questions, comments? If not, all in favor of the A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion is passed and the amendment is adopted. Again, Representative Swazinski, any further comments on your bill?
You know, just to finalize, this bill really provides for guidelines for transportation and, most importantly, importation of saltwater aquatic life. It is similar to the current statutes that govern transportation and importation of aquatic life for freshwater species, and that's really the point that we're making, is because this is a new burgeoning industry but dealing with saltwater species, we want to make sure that the laws and the structure moving forward are ahead of the game so that we're ready for this industry as it grows here in the state of Minnesota.
Representative Clark.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, which state agencies oversee the transportation? Is it MnDOT, DNR?
Clark Johnson, I meant to say. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Johnson. So, you know, this is primarily in Chapter 17, which would be in agriculture.
It is Department of Agriculture.
Thank you.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If there is an accident, if there is a release, what's the agency that would have jurisdiction, and are there penalties of any sorts?
Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, I believe that the Department of Agriculture, because it's the defining department, the overseeing, because it's the agricultural use, agricultural spill, and I don't know if they want to speak to that, but yeah. So I believe that, and then obviously any department when you potential release could be other agencies as well as needed.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And are there penalties if there's a release?
Representative Swazinski.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, I do not know that off the top of my head. No, I do not.
Maybe we can catch up and find that out.
Okay.
The bill is going to be laid over. So anybody in the audience who would care to comment? Representative Soik.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a clarification, because this has created other doorways that I'm starting to think about, not that I thought about when I was preparing. The point being, is this also then applying itself to all of the stages of life that a entity might be coming, being shipped in, and then as native or what were species that are being shipped in are being regulated, when that species starts its own life cycles and starts being born here, are there continued concerns for the regulation of this species into our habitat or into our environment and into our life? I'm just trying to figure out how wide are we making the fence of concern here.
Representative Swazinski?
Sure, Mr. Chair, members. So, you know, if you kind of think of it, this is not new territory. This is just expanding it to areas we didn't really expect agriculture to be in the state of Minnesota, saltwater agriculture. So if you think of it in the lines of importation of a chicken from overseas, right? So essentially what we're doing is, you know, creating through the different departments, the different handbooks, you know, looking at best practices and how that is best. So what's the disease management? Are these animals diseased? Are they coming from a disease-free place, a hatchery? You know, following that animal and bird right through, and then just from a regulatory practice, as it would for other species, bring that into saltwater species as well. So it's not, you know, burgeoning, you know, what we're trying to do is shepherd this so that it includes saltwater agriculture along with a lot of other regulatory issues that are placed with beef or cattle or pigs or chickens or the rest. And so because there's not, I mean, you know, there's not currently, I don't believe there's any licensed shrimp farm per se within the state of Minnesota. I mean, they do exist, but in the Department of Agriculture, they're not a regulatory industry. But because this is going to be such a large industry, you know, there is, you know, it's just like anything, you would like to have some safeguards and you want it to apply.
Follow up, Representative.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This may be hopefully stopping the idea of this goes into unintended consequences. So are we adequately spacing or creating a distance from people that have their own aquariums and are shipping some form of food in for their – I used to do that, and that's why I'm sitting here thinking, okay, will these laws apply to when I was shipping in the eggs to grow out the food? Or, you know, how does this apply itself to that space? Or are they just protected, held harmless from the law?
Representative?
Mr. Chair, I kind of think I got your question, but maybe if you could repeat whatever that was. I think I understand what you're saying is, you know, essentially you're asking the question of will this, you know, the spacing, will I potentially affect other species, you know, that sort of, you know, being aquatic in nature, you know, there are different, you know, take the avian influenza. So I had a breakout in my neighborhood, which had large turkey producers back years ago. And so the department, essentially what they did, whether they were a small producer, which were my neighbors and myself, who maybe had 5 or 6 chickens, versus a barn that had 10,000 turkeys in it because they were aviary, because they were a bird, all encompassed, and all those things apply to all producers, large and small. So if there was a blockade on the export or the movement of those chickens outside of the quarantine area, then it applied to birds, no matter whether big or small. And, you know, shrimp being different because it's aquatic, you know, the disease structure, the way the things move is much different than it would be for saltwater in a freshwater area.
Thank you, Representative. And again, this bill is going to be held over. Any further questions? Anybody in the audience who would care to testify on the bill? Seeing none, any final comments, final wrap-ups, Representative?
No, I appreciate the opportunity. I appreciate the time in front of the committee. Representative Mahoney, we will get back to you. We can discuss that in depth in those particular areas. And I appreciate the chair's support and the inclusion of a potential bill that moves forward. Thank you.
Yeah, this is a new and exciting industry for the state, and I want to roll it out correctly, and I think you're doing the right thing. So with that, We need a fiscal note on the bill, so it's going to be held over until we get that. So with that, the bill is going to be held over. Thank you, Representative. Next up, House File 3216, Representative Schumacher. Welcome to the committee. And Representative Daniels, would you like to move the bill?
Thank you, Chair. I move House File 3216 be re-referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources Policy and Finance.
Representative Schumacher, I believe you have an amendment to your bill. Would you care to discuss that?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you for hearing the bill today. The amendment came from MPCA. It's some language that they had negotiated with the other bill author and the other body to make sure that the language complied.
Okay. So they are okay with the language?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Any questions from members on the amendment, the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The amendment is passed. And Representative Schumacher, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This morning, this bill, we're talking about truck washes and basins, and I'm just going to let my constituent and testifier get into the root of the problem and what we're trying to solve here.
Good morning, ma'am. Identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair and committee, Joan Miller. I am owner and operator of T&J Trucking, located south of Marshall, Minnesota, about 35 miles. And my husband owns and operate this trucking business. We haul grain and fertilizer as well as livestock. And we've been in the livestock part of the business at least 3 years now. And we've come to find out that there was a need for a truck wash in our area. We are out in the country, 30 miles from any real big city, it's called Marshall City. And so we're out in the middle of nowhere. And the problem we faced was sitting in line for 2 or 3 hours getting our livestock trailers washed out at other facilities. And they were at least 2 hours away from our home base, which left us missing loads or drivers away from families. So the husband and I decided to build this truck wash, and partway through the water-holding basin, they told us that we needed to have a cover on this facility. And the further we got into it, the more they kept saying we needed this cover, MCPA did, and the more we've visited with them, they agree with us that no cover is needed since all the waste, the solid waste and the liquid, gets separated out before it goes to the holding pond. And there's no smell to it. We've had water sample, we've had the pond tested, and it is basically 99% water that is in that holding pond. Therefore, we don't feel there is necessary for the cover, which would be an extreme cost to our company that we just would not be able to afford. Thank you.
Questions from members? Seeing none, anybody in the audience who would? Okay. I believe we have somebody coming down to testify on the bill. Good morning, sir. Identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is David Preisler with the Minnesota Pork Producers Association. I would encourage passage of House File 3216 as amended. As we look at truck washes and animal disease, quite simply, we need more truck washes, not fewer. Whether we're looking at preventing disease or having to react to one, like what happened with avian influenza, truck washes are an essential part of both prevention and then also reacting to issues if they may come about. Covering the ponds really has no environmental benefit since the liquid, just as you've heard, is basically water. It also, though, is required to be tested, and then that water is then recycled onto farmland. In their case, I believe twice a year that would happen. You've also heard, the cost to cover is substantial, and it inhibits people from actually making the investment in these buildings. And again, from our standpoint, we believe we need more of them and not fewer. I believe that the MPCA is going to speak to this issue also, and it's our understanding that they don't have any objection to this bill. With that, thank you, and I stand for any questions.
Questions from members? Representative Lewick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I just wanted to comment that Representative Schumacher has got a good bill here. As one who owns a livestock moving system in my backyard, I not on the scale that the previous testifier does, but I do transport my own livestock to market and have to deal with ensuring that that trailer is washed, because, you know, if I go to a market where there's 100 other trucks come in there, you want to be very sensitive about bringing any residue back onto your own farm. We're really concerned about biosecurity, and whether it's swine, poultry, or cattle, it's a big deal. And as a testifier said, we can't have enough truck washes out there. They need to be close, and they need to be easy to get to, so you can clean your stuff up, because we don't want to track. You know, there are diseases in the animal world that are just like the common flu, that it's really easy to transmit them, so you want to have that opportunity to clean things up quickly as possible. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I didn't see a question here, but a comment and very good words. Representative Salk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So you've begged the question, do you have anything that would help us understand how many facilities currently function in this space of need, and how many is going to be, how much are we going to expand that facility stock that we have? Anything that's analytical is sort of what I'm looking for. I mean, I certainly understand that I don't doubt your veracity of saying we need more, but it's useful for me to be able to see something that describes that.
Mr. Pressler.
Mr. Chair, I think that, first of all, we do not have a number of, like, that exists of both commercial truck washes and also private washes. We are seeing more and more of them built, though. Talked with the Pollution Control Agency just before this meeting started, and I think had about a half dozen or so just in the recent past, new ones. I think there's a, you know, continually, though, as we look at, you know, just, again, biosecurity, and I think one other issue that will probably drive some of it also, too, are new regulations that are coming on trucking and hours of service and some of those issues, to where, as a trucker, you just can't afford to sit and wait at a truck wash, because you will be on the clock, so to speak. And so if you can build additional washes out there, it will most certainly help with that whole issue, as far as kind of the shortage of truckers that are out there, too. You know, I can't give you an actual number of what it would end up being, but I can tell you that it would be a growing number.
Thank you very much. Anybody else? Questions? Yeah, we have Mr. Smith. Welcome to the meeting this morning. Good morning. Identify yourself and proceed for the record.
Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the chance to be here this morning. My name is Jeff Smith. I'm the director of the Industrial Division at the MPCA. All the things that were commented here from the testifiers is true. We appreciate Representative Schumacher's amendment. I think that lines up the House and the Senate bills, so that's great. To the question about the number of facilities, that is correct. We've got about a half a dozen in the state right now. We're seeing probably one to two per year going forward, and those do require MPCA permits. So this will be helpful in that the biosecurity concerns of the livestock industry, we need their truck washes, and the key part of these truck washes, they are not connected directly to a feedlot, and that's why that biosecurity is protected. In 2015, the MPCA worked with the Minnesota pork producers to amend the permitting requirements to help address the need for new freestanding truck washes. In the last couple of years, as I said, we've permitted about a half a dozen of these, and they provide truck washing services both for livestock industry as well as other industries. And this bill retains the agency's ability to protect public health and the environment from any manure that may be washed into these truck wash basins. We worked with the authors on this language, as we did in 2015, and we are fine with the bill as amended before you. And to the question and concerns about the Ms. Miller. With this amendment, a cover will not no longer be required for their particular wash facility, and I think that's the question about money certainly is out there, and we certainly want to see more of these truck washes, and we want them to be constructed to be protective, but also in a reasonable at a reasonable cost. So with that, I can take any additional questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. Questions from members? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony. Good to work with you. Any final comments, Representative Schumacher, on your bill?
I appreciate your support.
And with that, Representative Daniels, would you care to renew your motion?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I renew my motion that House File 3216, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Environment and Natural Resources Policy and Finance.
And all those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion passes, and the bill is on its way. Thank you, Representative Schumacher.
Thank you.
And thank you, ma'am. Okay. Representative Poppy, you're up next. We'll get the bill number here in just a second. House File 3331. Representative, would you care to move
yes.
the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move that House File 3331 be referred to the Committee on Taxes.
So go ahead and present your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm here today just presenting a bill that would allow for a tax exemption for drain tiles. And this isn't necessarily something I'm fully familiar with. I spend more time talking about supporting farmers with mental health and other related issues to make sure that they can be healthy and able to be productive on the farm. But we've certainly heard a lot of stories about farmers and the high cost of production, input costs, the pressures that they face, the challenges, and tax policy is one of those things that certainly we hear about along those lines. So trying to come up with something that would maybe, I know this has been around for a while, this concept, and so I'm kind of bringing it back and hoping to have another look at it. It might be favorable as we move along and see what a tax bill will look like, and I might be able to include this. But certainly anything that we can do, I think we can't necessarily help with the commodity prices. We can't necessarily do a lot more on trade policy is a concern right now, and certainly health care continues to be a concern. But in tax policy, maybe there are some things that we could continue to do, and this is one of those suggestions. So I'm just bringing it forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Poppy. Questions from members? Anybody in the audience who care to testify on the bill? Seeing none, good idea. And as you mentioned, times are tight on the ag side, and this certainly would be a way to help farmers. Any final comments, Representative?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I would like to renew my motion that House File 3331 be re-referred to the Committee on Taxes.
And all those in favor of that resolution, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The motion passes. And the bill is on its way to taxes. Thank you, Representative. This one. Next bill up, House File 3330. Representative, would you care to move your bill, Representative Kunish Padin?
I so move my bill, House File 3330. Thank you.
And no amendments, so please present your bill.
All right. This bill is a bill to prohibit the use of a gas chamber for euthanasia in animal shelters. It's kind of near and dear to myself. For the past 5 years, my husband and I have done foster dog care, where we take dogs into our homes, and some of them up to almost a year, trying to get them in order and find good homes for them, forever homes. We've had to have that experience of ending or terminating the life of of a dog or two, and it's a very sensitive issue, and I think it's important that we are addressing this in a very humane way. This bill is one that would prohibit the use of gas chambers for euthanasia in animal shelters. I know these shelters work really hard to find home for homeless animals, and there are times when animals' life needs to be terminated for that quality of life. I don't think it's the best way is to use these gas chambers, and would ask that euthanasia would be in the form of injection, as it is probably the most humane, the most safe way to effectively end the life of an animal. And I know that this maybe has come before you before, but I think there are two important reasons that we need this law. And the first is because the shelters aren't required to report their use, and we want to make sure that all shelters have transitioned to euthanasia by injection, but we can't really be certain without the law in place. And second of all, that the shelters themselves have been said to want to use these humane standards in law in order to increase public confidence and reflect the good work that they're doing. At this time, Minnesota does not have this law. There are 27 other states that carry this law, and I think it is important that we follow it and put this into place to show that we have the highest standards in animal welfare. And for this reason, I feel this passing this bill is very important.
I have a question from Representative Munson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative. How many shelters in Minnesota currently use gas chambers?
From what I understand, there are none that do at this time.
Representative Munson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As a follow-up question, is this a growing trend in the country that they're opening up more of these gas chambers?
I don't believe so. Excuse me. Thank you, Chair. I don't believe so, Representative, but I think it's important that we have this on the books so that down the road this isn't something that could start up again or re-enter the animal shelters.
Representative, any follow-up?
Yeah, I'm sorry, one more, Mr. Chair. And is there any similar method that's used by either the government or the Department of Agriculture when they euthanize, flocks of birds for for biosecurity reasons or when there's an outbreak?
But just a second here. We have to emphasize that this is a strictly crafted bill, and we're only referring to animal shelters here. So let's make that distinction, okay? Yeah. Do you want to go ahead with your question?
Yeah, I guess I'm trying to figure out if it's only for pet shelters?
Correct.
Okay. Okay, so withdraw the question, but just trying to figure out the scope of how prevalent this is.
Yeah, the bill was crafted very narrowly to only apply to animal shelters, pet shelters, that type of thing. Correct, Representative?
Absolutely correct, yeah. Chair. Thank you.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Any further questions? I believe we have a couple of testifiers.
Yep, I do have a testifier.
Good morning. Identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. My name is Christine Coughlin. I'm the Minnesota State Director with the Humane Society of the United States. And on behalf of our 16,000 members in the state, we encourage your support for House File 3330. Humane Society of the United States is a national animal protection organization working for the protection of all animals, and we're the leader in the nation in terms of providing care, whether it's our rural area veterinary services, our animal rescue team, our animal care centers, or our sanctuaries, or our Pets for Life program. We provide hands-on care to over 100,000 animals every year. We're not affiliated with or an umbrella organization for local humane societies and shelters. Each one of them is their own independent entity, which means the broad support that they've shown for this bill is even more meaningful. Gas chambers cannot provide a true euthanasia in animal shelters that is both pain-free and stress-free in the way that euthanasia by injection can.
Euthanasia by injection is safer, cheaper, and is widely used. As was mentioned, we're not hearing of gas chamber use in the state, which is a great thing, but it does beg the question, why then do we need a law? Two very simple reasons. One is, right now we're relying on hearsay and hope. We're hearing that none are used, and we're hoping that none are used. The reason why is shelters are not required to report use of gas chambers. So the intent is really to bring in all animal shelters, make sure that they have the resources that they need. We have grants available to help them transition to euthanasia by injection if necessary, so this won't fall on the taxpayer. The second reason is, unfortunately, misperceptions still persist among the public that gas chambers are being used by animal shelters. Passing this law will increase public confidence in the good work that the shelters are doing in our state. I've spoken with so many shelter leaders around the state. They enthusiastically endorse this. They would love to see this passed in law. This is an opportunity for all of us to support the good work that they're doing day in and day out in communities around the state. We did our very best to draft this very narrowly and very explicitly. It affects pet and companion animals and animal shelters only. It has no impact on agriculture. I've done my very best to reach out to the agriculture groups, to the commodities groups, to the Board of Animal Health. We remain open to any changes that would be needed to be made to mitigate any concerns about impacts on agriculture. So in conclusion, there are 27 other states that have passed this type of legislation. There's broad support among the public and animal shelters. We're not hearing of any opposition. It costs nothing, and it would be a great way for us to show our support for the good work that shelters in our state are doing. So thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it.
Questions? Other testifier, Kathy Mock. Good morning. Identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Kathy Mock, and I'm the Chief Government Affairs and Community Engagement Officer for the Animal Humane Society. A little bit of background about the Animal Humane Society. We are the largest humane society in the upper Midwest for companion animals. We have four shelters. We have a shelter in Golden Valley, a shelter in St. Paul, a shelter in Woodbury, and a shelter in Coon Rapids. All of our shelters are open admission shelters, which means that we take in all companion animals regardless of their age, health, breed, or behavior. Each year we see about 24,000 animals through our shelters, and we are proud to say that we have an over 96% placement rate, which means that 96% of the animals that come through our doors are placed in homes or reunited with their owners or placed with some of our rescue partners. And the average length of stay for a companion animal in one of our shelters is about 10 days. So they get in and they get out quickly and go to their forever homes or perhaps to your house for a foster stay. I think if you heard of the Animal Humane Society, most of you know us for our adoption. We also do a host of other activities. We have a number of humane education programs. We work with the schools. We have summer camps for kids at our shelters. In fact, each year we see about 12,000 kids, either in classrooms or on our campuses, learning about humane education. We also, about 3 years ago, started an outreach program where we actually go into low-income communities and provide low-income folks with help for their pets so they can keep their pets in their home. Right now we're concentrated in Frogtown in East St. Paul, and over the past 3 years we've helped over 6,000 families with their pets. We also do boarding, training, we have a pet helpline, we have a transport program, and all of this work is done with our own staff, and we have about 24,000 volunteers that help us with these animals. I'm here to testify in support of House File 3330. You got a letter passed out to you. We are a signatory to the letter, as are 23 other shelters in the state that support the passage of this bill. We do not use a gas chamber. We have not used a gas chamber for almost 20 years. Unfortunately, there is still a perception in the community that we do. And there's a perception in the community that other shelters do, which is harmful to the shelter community. It keeps people out of our shelters and makes them more reluctant to come in, adopt, or if they need to, rehome an animal. So passing the law, although none of the shelters that we are aware of use a gas chamber. Passing law is important for that reason. It also is important, again, like was also discussed, that it ensures that shelters will use the most humane way when euthanasia is necessary to euthanize an animal, and that's euthanasia by injection. So we think passage of this law is important. It would demonstrate our state's commitment to companion animals, to protecting companion animals, and to recognizing the people that care for them. So we support the bill and support its passage. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Mott. Anybody in the audience care to testify on the bill? Any other questions from members? Seeing none, any final comments, Representative Punish-Podine?
Thank you, Chair. I want to thank you for hearing this. Bill, I know you're seeing this as an information session, but I would ask you and ask the committee to move this on to ensure that this moves to become a bill in Minnesota as confirmation of our humanity and the way that we and the life of our animals in our shelters. Thank you.
Thank you much. Yeah, we're going to lay the bill over and can possibly move it, but very, very informational hearing, so I thank you for that as well.
Thank you.
Well, again, we're going to lay the bill over and keep it in mind for further consideration. Any other comments or questions? We do have some special guests in the audience today. I think a couple of them have just left, but corn growers, Minnesota corn growers here, why don't you stand up and tell us where you're from?
Kirby Hepper from DeGraff, Minnesota, president of the Minnesota Corn Growers Association. Paul Knitting, Okabena, Minnesota.